Too many leaders lead for validation, not impact, for what they can get out of it more than what they can give to it. Hi, my name is Chris, and I'm obsessed with how leaders grow and develop, and I too have insecure moments. We all do. Glad you're here with me now on the SiteShift podcast so you can learn how to lead for impact, not validation. All right, Mark, glad to have you back. Welcome to episode 2 of this new format we're doing. We had a little bit of audio issues on the first one, so we're getting better, guys.
We're getting better.
Yeah, that's what we got to do. So what this series came out of is us looking at last quarter companies we're serving and realizing that in those companies we're serving, they have more than one family member present. They don't necessarily think about themselves as a family business, but there's more than one family member present. And so we wanted to record content from our experience to help you wherever you find yourself in a business and you've got more than one family member involved. So that's what we're here to do today.
Yeah, let's go.
One of the realities that you're going to think from this episode, if you did not listen to the first episode, is that we're in any way going to beat up on the senior or authority or first leader, mom or dad, depending on first, second generation. If it's second generation, you know, before they hand it off to the grandkids, we're not doing that. That's not the point of today's episode. You know, if you get that tone or tenor, we've done a bad job communicating, but we are going to have to speak directly to what happens if mom or dad is in a place that they say, I know best.
Yeah.
And if my idiot kid can, you know, handle this, he won't screw it up. She won't screw it up. And we want to articulate why that is not a good approach to have.
Families are complicated and challenging. Businesses are complicated and challenging. And the intersection of the two just multiplies those complications and those challenges.
Yeah, man. I mean, just, gosh, packing up to go on vacation and much less. And this is the experience we're teaching you from. The challenges of that versus even more going on a journey as a business. So huge, huge, huge. So what we're going to do at the end is give you 3 moments that have to happen that are going to show us that you are not trapped by the lie, I know best, they just need to do what I'm saying. So we're going to give you those. But for now, we're going to walk through 5 realities that happen, 5 negatives that occur. If you're showing up and going, I'm smarter, I know better, and they just need to listen. I'm just curious, Mark, have you ever worked for a leader that had a little bit of that flavor or vibe before?
Just one.
Just one? Oh, he didn't know I was going to ask
only
that.
Only one?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I mean, what was that like for you to be in a room with somebody who leads like that?
Yeah, like, I think there... It's played out for me in a couple different ways. One, the very obvious, I need to be the smartest person in the room and I need you to know that I'm the smartest person in the room. Like more of that that dominant style. And you know, everybody's just kind of on their heels. Who's going to challenge that person, right? Who's got that courage? The other way that I've seen this play out is just that more passive aggressive type of style where you don't want to set them off. You don't want to be the person that says the thing that sets them off and kind of catches the wrath because you've seen it before. So like just managing that dynamic, delicately trying to navigate that. And when that's in play, when that's the case, like the real work isn't getting done. The real conversations, the real issues, the real work is not getting done because everybody's on their heels trying not to be the one that receives that energy coming back, like because the leader feels threatened.
It's exhausting. I mean, you think about how much that takes up from the real work of advancing. So if as a leader, you find yourself on this edge of the combatant, aggressive, dominating, or the more passive aggressive, and you're kind of not really going to give a lot of strong, clear, healthy leadership, But when the bear is poked, you're coming out. Mm-hmm. Wherever you find yourself on this spectrum, we really do want to help you like wake up, because five realities are going to come to bear and you don't want these five. We believe that. That's why we're here. But it is what happens. So let's run through these five and paint this picture out for you so you can know if you're in the danger zone. Number one, you're going to undermine morale. You're going to undermine morale. Think about, you know, the energy it takes to put your initiative into something, to try something new, to risk something, to take action. Even sometimes the energy it takes just to show up, you know, on a Tuesday morning after a hard personal situation on Monday night. This undermining team morale, what happens for a lot of people, we don't understand the way energy works, is yes, leaders shouldn't be fragile. Okay, I get that. But energy is so precious, right? It's so valuable. And we think about time as valuable. And of course it is. You know, if you got 17 people in a meeting for an hour and you waste 10 minutes, you're not wasting just 10 minutes. It's time 17. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we think enough about this idea of energy and morale. And if you're not thinking about it, start thinking about it. Start looking in the eyes. Do you see engagement? How do you look for morale? What are some signs or signals to you that you see morale as healthy or negative?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and let me paint a scenario or a picture for you. A way that I've seen morale undermined is when there's a commitment to a policy or a procedure or some process, and the organization has rallied around executing that, and then the leader undermines that process or that procedure by making an exception or by doing something that the policy or procedure was intended to kind of guard against. And I'm kind of a policy and procedures guy. Chris knows this. Now you guys know this. So I can see it from that lens, but just thinking of a very specific example of where a mom leader in an organization made a made organizational wide guidelines, but she doesn't follow them for her own children who work in the organization as well.
Yikes.
It's undermining morale.
Yeah, yeah. You know, for me, it's all this is framed with this idea of like, I'm intellectually superior, I know best. And when you're leading a team that way, especially when it's family members, then what you need to understand is that way of showing up is going to completely deflate them becoming who they can become. And if you keep repeating this over and over, you're going to see the second reality occur, which is you stifle creativity and innovation. So the whole point of a different perspective isn't for the comforting of your insecurities. It's not for uniformity. We have difference in thought. We want to get to unity, but that difference in thought is what creates the innovation. And so if you're reacting to the business like, I know best, and their ideas are stupid, then what happens is you're going to stop hearing those ideas. And the problem with that is, while your way of thinking and approach may be refined, you went through a lot of bad ideas to figure out what works. Mm. And if you don't appreciate and remember that, they're not going to be able to get through their bad ideas to get to the good ideas. And maybe they're the kind of disciplined thinker who is in a place that they've really evolved their systems and their approach and their protocols and their ways of filtering things to only bring the best ideas. And that has its own, you know, pros and cons in a team environment. But at the end of the day, if they don't feel safe to share, right, they're not gonna bring those ideas to bear. And if they're not bringing those ideas to bear, and they're wired up to be a kind of person who can contribute that way, that contribution is going to go somewhere,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
And they're going to vote with their feet. Yeah. And they're going to leave. What would you say to somebody that would be watching this, and they would be like, okay, well, how do I, in a healthy way, draw out their creativity, but not also let the organization fall victim to the bad ideas?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's giving them the freedom to express the idea, and then helping them to sort it, think it, experiment with it, own it. And you know, one of the things that you like to say is giving space for the bike wreck, but intervening to prevent the car wreck,
mm-hmm.
right? The little bumps, the bruises, the scrapes, that's all part of the learning experience. The car wreck can be the disaster experience. So giving them the freedom to crash the bike and learn what it feels like to crash the bike and then get back up on the bike without crashing the car.
I love it. If you're going to be a healthy leader and you're not going to be in this place of like, I'm intellectually superior, I know best. And again, not that you would ever even state that, but you know when you feel it deep down, then you're not going to teach them what the difference is between the bike wrecks and the car wrecks. If it's a car wreck, if it's off vision, if it is change resistant, if it is a values compromise, if it is a any of these ways that would degrade relationships, that's a car wreck. Everything else is a bike wreck. And what I'm looking to do in organizations is normalize uncertainty, risk, and bad ideas. Like, we're not going to risk everything and bet the farm, but I'm going to acknowledge the fact that I'm going to have 10 ideas before 9 a.m. and 7 of them the public should never hear, and 2 of them are terrible, and 1 might be good. By 3 p.m., you know, I'm like, what the heck was I thinking? Mm-hmm. So, but the idea here is you get to normalize this, and you get to normalize an environment where our identity isn't on the line with every idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, hey, let's try this. This might work. This might not work. But if you're not in that place, you're going to stifle that creativity and innovation, which is going to lead to the third piece. And this one is like, especially if it's your kids, you're going to get this. You limit their growth and their development.
May I jump in with a story?
Yeah,
this makes me think of a story my dad told about his growing up. And the chore was to make the bed. But what he and his brother figured out is that no matter how they made the bed, mom always came back, undid it, and redid it the way she wanted it. So what did they learn? Let's stop making the bed. Because no matter what I do, mom is going to fix it her way anyway. So they just learn to stop making the bed, let mom do it.
Dude. I mean, here's the thing. And some of you are getting the subtext here, the subversiveness of this. All of this applies to every company everywhere, even if family aren't involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because really what healthy leadership is doing is raising leaders. And a lot of times we see organizations that aren't raising leaders. Instead, they're learning how to nag through management because I can't do it as good as them. And so, like, the people that you don't want long-term in your culture, parasitically hiding out, are going to figure out, if I do a bad job cutting my chicken, mom will cut my chicken for me. And what's happening? You're limiting their growth and their development. So I get it. Like, the organizations we work with, anywhere from 2 million to 100 million to 2 billion to more than that. What we see over and over and over and over and over is leaders that oftentimes get promoted are over-promoted doers because they haven't had the chance to really grow in who they can become as leaders. And what an opportunity, especially in businesses where there's family involved. This is their chance to grow up. And we don't want to deny them that, because here is the reality. If they're not getting the chance to learn how to make the bed, they're not going to become the leaders they need to be. And what I've seen over and over is the secure leaders, those who know who they are, they understand they're going to make the bed 10 times bad, 20 times mediocre, 30 times okay before they make it, you know, at a great level. And they may not have a great talent for making a bed, right? But their gifts and wiring lay elsewhere. That's your job to create an environment where they get to figure that out. You know, when I think about this limiting growth and development, so Mark has a large corporate experience. You know, when you think about the people that are in a corporate organization at multiple layers that are wanting growth opportunities, wanting development opportunities, you know, is there a way that a leader can create an atmosphere on the team, even in layered organizations, to let them grow and develop? And if so, how does that work? Yeah. I'm really curious with this. He didn't know I was going to ask him.
Yeah. No, absolutely. There is a way. But it requires that shift in the leader to see, I am investing in the growth and the development of this person. Mm-hmm. Even if it means I need to let go of this person and let them launch into a different part of the organization to explore more of what's available within the large company. Like, one of the advantages of working for a large company is all the different areas that you can expose yourself to and get into in a large company. One of the disadvantages is having to let people go. Hmm. Losing people. So it requires that secure leader to be able to say, I'm investing in you, the person, to raise you up as a leader, because I will be better off for it as long as you're on my team, and the organization will be better off for it as long as you're in the organization. But it requires that security and that confidence as a leader to be able to say, this is about you and I'm raising you up, knowing full well it's likely that you're going to spread your wings and fly and take your talents and your abilities and your gifts to somebody else in the organization.
It's awesome. And you can see the carryover to a parent to a child. So if you're intellectually superior, I know best, they don't know, you're going to stifle them. You're going to stifle the innovation. You're going to limit their growth. And what that's going to lead to is a fourth mark here, culture of dependency, mm-hmm. And you know, when you're in a culture of dependency, when, especially like as we're with organizations a lot, and you say something and everyone looks to the leader before they feel like they can speak. Mm. Like when you're in a healthy organization and it's not like wanton rebellion and full mutiny, healthy cultures know how to respect the leader, but the leader has also created an atmosphere where those people know they can speak up.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially with family, it's like when you watch the eyes dart towards dad or mom, and there's almost a fear,
yeah.
Right? And the analogy I like to give to this is, it's like you've walked into somebody's home and you've got grown adults sitting in a high chair, fully competent and capable, but they're banging on the high chair for their sippy cup to be filled, or for their water to be filled, or for their food to be served. And, you know, I know that's a big dramatic picture. And I know that some people watching this would be like, no, we're nothing like that. But I do want you to check yourself before you wreck yourself, as they say. This culture of dependency that happens this quick when you're cutting them off from their growth, just ask yourself this question. You know, are there ways that they're able to clearly communicate the vision on my behalf? Are they improving systems? Are they nurturing key relationships? Because if not, you got a culture of dependency. Hmm. When you think about this as just like the parenting example, and I know we're talking about in a business context, you know, obviously a parent, I think you've got, you know, a lot of wisdom and skilled expertise on this. A parent is bringing, you know, order to the chaos. Right? What has been huge for you in learning how to help bring the order to the chaos, but still keep a focus on them becoming independent?
Yeah. I guess maybe two things come to mind. One, we're raising adults. We're not raising kids. So like philosophically from the beginning, the whole point was to raise adults that can be on their own, fully functioning, making their own decisions, making their own calls. Which requires us to let go, for sure, but it's part of that investment from the beginning. The second piece is we've got to let them make their decisions. We can't step in and bring the mom or dad, I'll just rescue you and fix it energy every time they get into a bit of a jam. We've got to let them wrestle, struggle, figure it out, and not let them just flop and twitch in the wind, leave them abandoned, but let them wrestle and struggle through the process of figuring it out, because that's how they grow and develop and get ready to be fully on their own when mom and dad aren't around to even have the option for us to, you know, rush in and fix it.
That's awesome. We can't give you all the ways it's going to go wrong. We can give you the way it's going to go right. And that's raising them to release them. And that's what you're doing with leaders. And if you get the mindset of this, the behavior will organize around the mindset. But if it doesn't, this last mark that happens, the fifth one, you get, well, you could say this generally, like you get increased turnover and disengagement, but you can say specifically, your kid's going to bounce. They're voting with their feet. Yes, they may need to leave as they discover who they really are. That does happen sometimes. But oftentimes, there's an unnecessary leaving that happens because they've decided they don't want to be the camel to your vision anymore, to use the Nietzschean progression. They're going to be the lion. And they don't really know who they are, but they're going to show you who they're not. And they're going to have to run through a cycle of rebellion. That was an unnecessary, intense, longer cycle than it has to be, because they weren't allowed to flourish in the environment there. And again, sometimes they got to leave for a healthy reason. But if it is an unhealthy leaving to the degree that they've been weighted down with you telling them who they're going to be, is how much now they're going to have to work that out psychologically. And some, you know, some parents have the wisdom and the foresight to be like, all right, I'm going to let them work through this cycle and I'll be here when they're done if they want to come back. Sadly, some do some damage in this phase that can literally make the relationship repairable, but the chance of ever sharing in a vision together, irreparable. So what for you, when you think about engagement, what's a primary one or two ways you're going, I know someone's engaged if this is happening?
Yeah, good question. Well, they're curious, they're asking questions, they're wanting to know more, for sure. And I think there's a willingness to step in and take some risk, to say yes. Mm-hmm. You know, from someone in the past who was pretty fluent in saying no, to now becoming someone who is much more comfortable, fluent, saying yes. It's overly simplified, but I was engaged up to a point in that persona that was pretty quick to say no. I'm much more engaged when I'm the persona that is able and willing to say yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. Well, so here's what we want to do now. We want to shift this and give you the positive marks to look for. And there's a lot of different ways we could have this conversation. Who you are as a secure leader, what does it mean to have a healthy culture? But we want to give you three moments that have to happen for you to really show you're not maintaining this position of insecurity, of intellectual superiority, I know best and they just need to follow me. And if your child is becoming wise, as they take the helm of the business, three moments need to happen. One, there has to be a vision transfer. You have to be able to put your hand on their shoulder, look them in the eye and say, I am with you, I'll follow. I've been leading, now I follow. And again, this takes a number of years to progress through a succession plan. Second moment that has to happen is the organization has to see you publicly change and follow a new system that was put in place by the child. Mm-hmm. Like that cements in the change response. Third, there has to be a handoff of a key relationship. Something that you've nurtured over the years, key vendor, key client relationship, key partnership, whatever. They're still going to have a relationship to you, but you're saying to the organization, I trust my child with this key relationship. And if you have those three moments, you are on the path of a healthy succession. And I would give it the highest probability of success. If I'm an investor, I'm going to write the check to that business because I know that the depth has occurred. If those three moments haven't taken place, We're in a spot where some danger could still occur. And we want to help you see these moments very clearly so that wherever you find yourself in succession, you can navigate these waters and see what is our heart to see with you. A succession that takes place in a way that makes everything better. The lives of those at the business, the overall bottom line to the business, and the relationship you have with your children. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. So we're here to support that always. More at SightShift, SightShift.com. Thanks for being here with me today, Mark.
Thanks, buddy.
Awesome. Peace. Thanks for joining me on this episode. There's always more for you at SightShift, SightShift.com, to be the leader you were meant to be.